Good morning. I don't know about you, but it seems like a long time since we've sat here in this Sunday school class. And for us, we went to New York, so this is almost like different. I mean, really different. New York is different weather than ours, etc. And a lot has happened in our lives as well as in the world. I guess all of you know, I'm sure, about the shooting at the school. I'm going to make a couple comments because one of the news things that I was looking through, the title was, "Where Was God in the School Shooting?" And I thought, the schools wanted God out of the schools. So why would he be there to stop this thing? I mean, and then I think the press, the media, and anybody who ever backed the idea of defunding the police and getting rid of the police should apologize before they condemn the police for what they didn't do or did slowly, because they don't want them there at all. There would have been no stopping this young man. And it was the good guys with the guns who stopped the evil guy. And it does take that. And somebody talked about Israel hasn't had a school shooting in years and years. And they talked about one entrance. Well, there was one entrance at least that a teacher propped the door open, and that's how he got in. So it isn't totally the entrance way, but I saw a picture of an Israeli school class, and the teacher was carrying an AR-15, as all teachers are required in Israeli schools. So, you know, there's some things that that in America that just people don't seem to get yet. Evil is with us. You can say all you want to say about psychology and treating mental health issues, but the bottom line is there are people in this world who are wicked and evil and do not think normal. And you have to have in your society something to prevent that if that's what you really want to do, unless you're just going to let it run rampant. Hopefully you don't. But that was interesting. We went up to New York. I got to get up with a Coast Guard friend of mine in Pennsylvania halfway up, and that was kind of nice. My wife got to see her three sisters for the first time since 2015, I think it was. And she got to see a lot of other friends, both of us, that we've not seen in quite a few years because of this memorial service. Going up, it was raining in Scranton, Pennsylvania, so hard at 45 miles an hour, I could hardly see the white lines on the road. And for the first time ever, I saw a sign that had a picture of a tornado, and it said, "Tornado watch till 7 o'clock tonight." And I drove past that, and I thought, that would be interesting, because I couldn't see a tornado coming if it came. It was raining so hard. But 6.5 hours from here to my friend's house in Pennsylvania, coming back, somehow it became 8 hours. And we're running the same roads with no traffic and no other, and I haven't figured that out. My GPS, when we're coming home, we go down to Route 422, and I knew we had to go to the east. I looked at the map, and we call her Journey. Jane said, "Go west." And we said, "Turn it off." And then we're not following the GPS. Going up, we hit Route 81, which runs north and south. 81, the odd numbers go north and south. The even numbers go east and west. And it says when you get to 81, go west. And I've got, my GPS doesn't work as good as when I first had it. I don't know if it's got too complicated or what, but I have to look at a map to get where I'm going. I'm glad to be able to have a map. Okay. Also in the last couple of weeks, I've had different encounters, literally, and some of the things we have discussed come back up. I don't know how much you have learned here and then talked to somebody else about, but I'm going to tell you just a little bit, because you can pray for a particular lady. Because of my background in boats, because of my background of being a missionary, I have found on YouTube different people who are cruising on yachts in the same territory I've lived in. In fact, I wrote to this particular lady and I said, I've been where you've been. I know the street you were walking on. I know that store that was up behind, you know, in the video. And in fact, where you anchored, I've gone spearfishing. So, you know, I kind of curious, but this one lady had talked about it just a little bit, and I'm like, what? And then she wrote a blog, like 5,000 words, about how every morning she gets up thinking of committing suicide. And that's a big red flag if you don't know it, when they start actually talking about it. So I very reluctantly wrote to her, and it's gotten kind of interesting. And now the last word I got was she dropped her phone or something and quit working. So I don't know if she's going to be able to get what I've sent her, but I sent her basically God's simple plan of salvation, because you don't want to commit suicide and meet a holy God. Some people believe that if you commit suicide, you go to hell. I don't believe that. There's a guy in the Bible that committed suicide. Know who? There's two of them, actually, that I know of off the top of my head. Judas is one. Who? Saul, King Saul. But with King Saul, remember he went to the witch of Endor and she called up her evil spirit. But evidently the evil spirit didn't come. Samuel came. Yep. And Samuel said to him, tomorrow you'll be with me. That's not Saul's going to commit suicide and go to the lake of fire or whatever. He's going to go where Samuel is, which is a good place. Saul's life was messed up, that's for sure. And he did die, and his life was shortened because of the way he lived, but I don't believe he went to a bad place. So with all of that, I got to turn this thing on. Okay, there's your diagram. I'm hoping that I can't hardly read it. Maybe you can read it better. Yeah. I hope by now you've got a good idea of how to fill in the blanks. Oh, and in the meanwhile, I read a guy's news article in a news column where Tim LaHaye was wrong, that we are post-millennialists now. And he goes on, and I'm like, no, that doesn't mean that we're post-millennialists. He thinks that the church is going to go through the tribulation. He might be post-tribulation, but he's still pre-millennial. It's one of those differences, but I'm reading and I'm like, this is some stuff we've discussed here. And I don't know if you saw it or not, so I'm just telling you, he was wrong in that. I want to look at the two judgment seats. I want to back up. Oops, there we go. Okay, after the little season to your far right, there's a straight vertical line. And after that, new heavens, new earth, and the lake of fire. And at the top, the great white throne judgment. When I was a kid, I kind of had the general idea that everybody slept in the ground and be resurrected at some kind of judgment, and that would be the decision of where you went to heaven or went to hell. And I hope that you've got the idea there's something different the Bible teaches than that. There is actually two judgment seats, and that's what we're going to talk about today. First of all, the Ten Commandments. Can you get to heaven by keeping the Ten Commandments? Do you know of a group of people that teach that? I do. Called the Seventh-day Adventist. And every one of them who want to tell me they're going to get to heaven by keeping the Ten Commandments, I ask them for the ten. The high number is six. They can't name all ten. I says, how can you get to heaven keeping Ten Commandments you can't remember? So, you know, that's just one way to challenge them back. But the Ten Commandments. There's some things about the Ten Commandments that people don't seem to realize. To keep the Sabbath day. Do we keep the Sabbath day? Come on now. No. What day do we meet on? Actually, the first day of the week. Okay, the Sabbath day is what day of the week? Saturday. And Saturday hasn't changed. Saturday's still Saturday in the week. Now, if you want to keep the Sabbath day, like they did back in the days of Jesus Christ, are you keeping it if you're a Seventh-day Adventist? And the answer to that is no. One king took out 14 days out of our calendar. Another king took out a week. And so our calendar does not jibe with what they had back then. Plus the fact that it was a Jewish calendar. Do you know the difference between a Jewish calendar and our calendar? They start on the 1st and they only go to 28 because that's 4 weeks. And so what do you do with the extra days? For us, every 4 years, we have a leap year. For them, they have extra months and they just stick a whole month in. So again, they count time different than we count. And then, as my pastor pointed out over in Hickory one time, he was in the in Greenland. He says, when does a Sabbath day begin to a Seventh-day Adventist? Do you know when the Sabbath begins, if you're going to keep it? Friday night, our time at 6 o'clock, sundown. Because that's how the Jews counted time. So they keep time like the rest of us the rest of the week. But suddenly on Friday night, my basketball players couldn't play Friday night basketball because that would violate their Sabbath. Somehow they couldn't do Saturday night, because that's Sabbath day. But I'm like, fellas, according to your teaching, by 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock, your day, Sabbath, has ended. And we're playing basketball at 7. So excuse me, I expect you to be at the game. Okay? But the timing of going down of the sun was the beginning of a day. To which my pastor, who lived in Greenland for several months while he was in the military, said, what do you do when the sun goes down and doesn't come back for 6 months? Is that the Sabbath day? Good point. And then the other one is, because I lived on the other side of it, there's something called the International Dateline. If you lived in Samoa, as a tourist, you could find a place where the International Dateline goes so, and you could have 1 foot here and 1 foot there and straddle it. And if you pick up 1 foot, it's Sunday, and if you pick up the other foot, it's Saturday, and the sun is still straight overhead, so which day is it? And if you think that's not that important, I actually have a news article that I found where the Seventh-day Adventist had an argument about when to meet in a conference, of which one of those 2 days it should be. And they split in the Seventh-day Adventist over that issue, because one was on one side of the International Dateline and another group was on the other side of the International Dateline. Now, if you really kept the Sabbath day, do you know what you do to keep it? Besides go to church? But wait, as soon as you come to church, how did you get here this morning? Did you start the fire in your engine when you turned on that key? Did you know that keeping a fire on the Sabbath day is not to be done? And they didn't worship like we did. They didn't go to the temple on Sabbath day. They couldn't work. Their slaves couldn't work. The community, whatever, couldn't work, couldn't buy or sell. And so at that point, you have to control everything. Because how do you stop anybody from buying or selling unless you make a law against it? Now, maybe some of you might remember Sunday, what do they call those, Sunday rules? Yeah, you couldn't, at least liquor, you couldn't sell on Sunday. We've gotten away from that because we've gotten away from God. But the idea was still to control a day of which it would be different and which you would hopefully spend the time serving God. I can remember when no stores hardly would be ever open on a Sunday. And now you've got stores that are open 24/7, holidays and everything else. All right, keeping the Sabbath day. Numbers 15, if you would. Verse 32. No. Numbers 15:32. And while the children of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man that gathered sticks upon the Sabbath day. And they that found him gathering sticks brought him unto Moses and Aaron and unto all the congregation. And they put him in ward, put him in jail, because it was not declared what should be done to him. The Lord said unto Moses, the man shall be utterly put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones without the camp. And all the congregation brought him without the camp and stoned him with stones, and he died as the Lord commanded Moses. There's a Ten Commandment that carried a death penalty. And it carried it to the extent of he's picking up sticks. Number one, that's work. But number two, that's intent, motive. What are you going to do with the sticks? Make a fire. And so they say, what are we going to do with him? And God says, kill him. Execute him, actually, is a term. And stone him. Now, we worry about being nice to the person who we're executing. You know, they give a drug that puts him to sleep before they give him a drug that kills him. He may have tortured his victim before he killed his victim, and we don't take that into consideration. But God says, stone him. That is a terrible way to die, because you don't die when that first stone hits you, probably. And you probably feel a whole bunch of other stones hit you before you die. I don't know if you're familiar. I don't know what they did back then, but I've read some recent accounts, if you will, in Muslim territory where they stone people. They bury you at least up from foot up to your knee or up to your waist, so you can't go anywhere, so you're stuck in the ground. And you can't do much ducking or hiding or whatever, and then they stone you. And so that was a terrible way to die. So here's a man who violated the Sabbath day, and he was executed. Now, if you violate the Sunday, don't go to church. We execute you, right? No, we don't do that. But a lot of people get the idea, I'm not a bad person. But if you lived in those days, you realize doing something like he was doing carried with it the death penalty. That's a severe penalty. So God must have thought a lot about the Ten Commandments. You've heard, don't take the name of the Lord in vain. Now, I don't know about who and what, but I know I've heard it in America a lot, OMG. And people say it without even thinking about it. And people have actually said it, and I said, what'd you just say? And they're not even aware what they did. All right? Leviticus 24:16. He that blasphemeth the name of the Lord, he shall surely be put to death. And all the congregation shall certainly stone him, as well as a stranger, as he that is born in the land. When he blasphemeth the name of the Lord, shall be put to death. There's another one of the Ten Commandments that carries with it a death penalty. That's what God thinks of it. Don't take his name in vain. By the way, golly, gee, and gosh are also derivatives, if you will, of the Lord's name. Be very careful. And as a Christian, you should not be taking the Lord's name in vain. You've heard it said, thou shalt not commit adultery. And again, Leviticus 20:10. The man that committeth adultery with another man's wife, even he that committeth adultery with his neighbor's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death. Here in America, well, we just get a divorce and go our ways. But back in the days of Moses, they stoned people to death for committing adultery. Remember the woman that they brought and cast at the feet of Jesus? They wanted Jesus to say, this is the law, stone her to death. Of course, he should have asked, could have asked, where's the man? Because the woman caught him in the act. Where's the man? They didn't do that. I think they planned that thing. And they wanted Jesus to be responsible for saying, stone this person to death. That would take the place of the Roman government, who was the one who controlled that. And if he said something about, you got to go to the Roman government, then they would say, you're disobeying our Jewish law. So they thought they had him in either direction, but they didn't. But there's another commandment that carries with it a death penalty. We don't think much of those commandments or the penalties that go with them. But guess what? God thinks a lot of all of them. In fact, if you traced them all out, almost every one of the Ten Commandments carried a death penalty. Every one of them. So when a person would say they think of themselves as a good person, I don't know, there's Living Waters, I think it is, that does interviews on the street. And the guy eventually almost always asks, have you ever taken something that wasn't yours? That's stealing. Have you ever lied about something? That's lying. Have you ever had an impure thought with somebody else? Well, that's a sin too. And guess what? That carries a death penalty. And you think you're a good person. But in the eyes of God, he's telling us that's not good. Sermon on the Mount, chapters 5 through 7 in the book of Matthew. I didn't go through all of it because there's a lot there. Past, blessed is he that, da-da-da-da. You get past that a little bit. Matthew 5:21. Ye have heard that it was said of them of old time, thou shalt not kill. Whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. Matthew 5:22. But I say unto you, whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, what's that, idiot, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Wait a minute. That's a lot higher level than actually killing somebody. Because I can get mad and never show it. I can keep it down inside and just have these thoughts. I don't know if you've ever had those kind of thoughts. Somebody's cut you off while you're driving. Somebody got in line in front of you at the grocery store, or somebody said something to you that bothered you, and you're, be careful. And you can say, but I didn't say that to anybody, but God knows what you thought. So the penalty is you're a sinner and you've done something that is wrong. Matthew 5:27, you have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Remember, that carried the death penalty under the law. So you can say, well, I never, you know, followed up on that thought. The fact is that you had the thought, as far as God is concerned, is you sinned. And it carries a death penalty. What am I trying to get at? That some people who think they're pretty good, when they die, they're going to meet God and they're going to get to go to heaven because they're a good person. They've never been put in jail. They've never been in court. But God's courtroom and God's judgment and God's looking at us is a lot different than we look at ourselves, unfortunately. And so therefore, people could say, I'm a good person. The actuality is nobody's perfect. There's none righteous, no, not one. Okay, swearing. Did I have that? Do you swear? Nor by the earth. Don't swear by the earth, for it is his footstool. Neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. And he goes on with different things. Don't make that part of your vocabulary to swear. And there are people I've met who don't take the Lord's name in vain, but they've got some other little substitute in there that they use. Cheese and bread was one in St. Vincent that was very common for some reason. Be careful of that. Be careful of that. Oh, it does away with gosh and gee and darn. Yeah. It does away with OMG. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you kill someone and you bury the body and they don't, nobody connects you to the person who's disappeared. But finally, 30 years later, they find the body, they find evidence. I'll guarantee you, in our justice system, they will come and get you, and you will go to court, and you can be found guilty of murder. So you think that God can't do the same thing? Just because he didn't kill somebody as soon as they took his name in vain doesn't mean that God said that's okay. He could wait 100 years. And then you would stand before God and say, now what? I don't think it's a good idea to think that your good outweighs your bad. I didn't do it, but I thought about it. I one time had a scale. I just got a nice little focal point in the middle, and I had a long arm and a little basket at both ends. And I said, imagine your good outweighing your bad. I said, let's assume for a minute you just finally went to church one time. And you really dug deep and you put $10 in the offering plate. And I had a bunch of pennies and I dropped them in. It's heavy on this side. I said, but the fact is you smoke cigarettes. And I don't know, back then it was a dollar a pack. And now it's, I don't know, $3 or $4 a pack. And if you smoke a pack a day in 1 week, guess what? It's more than $10. So suddenly it's like this. Oh, by the way, you also drink. So we had more money. And by the way, you've done this wrong and that wrong. And there's no way that your good will ever outweigh your bad if you're really thinking along those lines. When you meet a holy God, he's going to put it in some kind of a scale because we fall so short. Set of scales. All right. So if you're not saved and you go to the great white throne judgment, remember what was the one criterion that you had to have in order to not get into the lake of fire? Revelation 20, there was one criterion that you had to have in order to not get into the lake of fire. Your name had to be written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And your name only gets there when you accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. The judgment that seems to be given there for works, the books that are open, it talks about in Revelation 20, I think is the degree of punishment. I think somebody who is somewhat good is going to get lesser punishment than somebody that just completely evil. I do believe that to whom much is given, much is going to be required. All right, now 2 Corinthians 5:10. Because I want you to look, because I want to show something to you. Verse 10, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body according to it done, whether we be good or bad. Now, that word judgment is we think of like the great white throne judgment. We think of a judgment in a courtroom. That word judgment in the Greek is actually the word bima, and it comes from the Olympics. And if you participated in the Olympics and you got first, second, or third, you stood on the bima seat, the judgment seat, and they would give you a reward. So this is not the great white throne judgment. This is a different terminology. And it seems to be that it's a good race, if you will, and those who did really well at it will get rewards. I think of it this way, that the Apostle Paul, who was beaten, stoned, and shipwrecked, and suffered many things serving the Lord, will get more of a reward than somebody who's, quote, a Christian, and I won't say, quote, is a Christian, but only comes weddings, funerals, Easter, and Christmas, and that's about it. They won't get as much as the Apostle Paul would. And again, there are things that we should be doing as Christians that if we don't do them, I think we can lose a reward. And for those who do them, I think they'll receive a reward. Now, part of that, I think, will come out during the 1,000-year reign when we rule and reign with him. Bob Jones the First, I think it was, used to say he'd like to be mayor of Greenville, South Carolina. You know, that would be his reward. Because there's going to be rulers over the different places in the kingdom of God during the 1,000-year reign. And this gives the idea that, yes, there will be rewards given to Christians who do good things. One of the things I remember as a child, I was probably, 15 or 16, I was in a school that had 450 people in my senior class. So it was a large school. And in fact, my sophomore year, they split our school, and my class was split. So there was another 450 who went to the brand new school across the river, and that became the great competition. And every time we, you know, competed against each other, it was a big to-do. And I remember being on some athletic thing, cross-country, wrestling, and track. I'd turn in my uniform for cross-country on a Friday and Monday pick up my wrestling uniform. I'd turn in my wrestling uniform on a Friday, and on Monday I'm running track. So those were my three sports. And they had this awards banquet. And I'd never been to an awards banquet, and I thought I would go. They had a guy come that was a quarterback for one of the New York football teams. His father was a preacher. He definitely knew how to speak, and it was great. The food was just great. And I remember going in this room full of people, and this speaker was destined to give us a challenge. And I'm sitting there eating this really delicious meal. And they had two tables about as long as this pew with trophies on top and trophies in between the two tables, as tall as I am. Most valuable player defense, most valuable player offense in football, most valuable basketball player, most valuable whatever. We had all kinds of sports. We had cross country, we had football in the winter, we had wrestling and swimming and basketball and gymnastics. In the summer we had tennis, track, baseball. So you had all these different sports. All of these trophies were there. And I can remember what it was like to sit there, and they listened, they started talking about who gets a trophy. First of all, you had to be on a team. And if you were on a team, I went to Elgin, Illinois, Elgin High School. She got a big letter E, which if you're really smart, you got a school jacket with the colors on the arm of the school and the colors, you know, the two types of colors. And you put that big E on the jacket, and you'd walk down the hallway, and these girls would be going, oh, yeah. I mean, you know. And so I was on a team, so I would get an E. But if you're on a football team and you played enough minutes or whatever, you got a little football and you could stick on there. If you're on a track team, cross-country team, you get a little shoe to put on there. If you were basketball, you got a little round basketball. So again, you know, you could walk the hallways with this jacket on and all these girls would know, yeah, he's not just on the team, he's one of the people. You had to score so many points in basketball. You had to place and score so many points when you were running on a track team. You didn't get these trophies without really participating. And like I said, with 450 seniors, if you're on the varsity team, you still had the juniors. Just to be on the team, you had to be good. I think they told me that when the basketball tryouts, and I already had played basketball in junior high, so when I came up to high school, I knew, that ain't going to work. They cut 60 people off of the team, off of the tryouts, before they come up with their 12 people for the team. And I knew I wasn't going to be making that cut, so I picked a different sport. Now, I had a friend of mine who was 6'6". And on his junior year, he tried out for the team and got cut. And that upset him so bad. He practiced, and so the next year, not only did he make the team, he made Illinois All-State basketball player. And he went to West Point when I went to the Coast Guard Academy. I found that kind of interesting. But at any rate, I'm at this awards banquet, and they start giving out this award and that award. They gave the E's out. They gave the shoes out. They gave the basketball and the football, and then they started giving these trophies for most valuable player, for the person scoring the most points in a game or something, whatever. And it just kept getting, and I'm sitting there. And they finally gave out everything. And I'm still sitting there. I got zero and nothing. Now, let me tell you something. When I got done, I said, this is not going to happen again. I am going to get better. I'm on the team, but I've got to score more points or run faster or something. That became my goal. Well, let me tell you something. At the Bema Seat of Christ, if you get nothing because you've done nothing now, you don't get a second chance. You're not going to get to come back and say, well, I should have done this, I should have done that. Right now, today, you need to learn to live for Christ, no matter what anybody else does. You need to say, I don't know about 450 other people, but I know what Christ has made available to me, and I need to take advantage of it, and I need to serve Him as best I can. And I challenge you to do that, because you're not going to get another opportunity, and you will be given a reward for what you do. And like I said, I think of somebody like the Apostle Paul, who suffered many things because he served the Lord, will get more of a reward than somebody else who just kind of came once in a while. I think I'm going to be done early. Bema, the Greek word for the Olympics, first, second, and third place positions. You might want to stick in your Bible under judgment, put a little note on the side, Bema, to remind yourself that is a Olympic term. That's not the idea of a court judgment seat. That's for actually being in the race and doing something. It's just a different kind of judgment seat. It's not the same as that great white throne judgment. Satisfied with just salvation. You can say, I'm saved. I know I'm going to heaven. But what are you doing for the Lord? And part of the response could be this way. So you're saved, but out of love for the Savior who saved you, what have you done for Him? He died for you. So sometimes you just have to say, I need to make the sacrifice, if you will, the time, the effort, whatever, to serve Him. And my sports award banquet, I just talked about that. And you don't get another chance. Two judgment seats. Which one will you be at? The Great White Throne Judgment or the Bema Seat of Christ? Because you'll be at one of the two. I don't know everybody here, but I would think that all of you have made professions of faith and say, I want to serve the Lord, but I'm not 100% sure of that. We've had friends who late in life realized I've never been saved. Late in life realized they never made that commitment to say, Jesus, I want you as my Savior. Okay, so we're kind of done with the outline I've given you. You have any questions? Some of you have come to me over the period of time and said, what about this? What about that? I've tried to answer them. Next week.
You had said about suicide. There was actually 7 people in the Bible that committed suicide.
What? About suicide? What?
There were 7 people.
I said meant 2. Did I mention 7? I didn't say 7.
Oh,
you said there's 7.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And the first one is Abelet. He was a young man. His armor bearer.
That's true.
Samson. Saul. Saul's body armor bearer. Ella and Zimrah and Judah.
Very good. By the way, Samson would be a good one to say, if you think you commit suicide, you're not going to get to heaven. You're going to go to the other place. Samson knew when he pulled down those pillars, he's underneath all of that. He knew he was going to die. But guess what? He's on God's roll call of the faithful. So, yeah, thank you. That's good. And okay. Next week, I'm probably going to be starting a book that Pastor wants me to use, and it's going to be made available to you. We'll go through it maybe in a little bit different format than we've been doing this, but it'll have a start point. It'll have an end point. So that's what we're going to do next time. It's not going to continue on to this. That'll be my next subject. Kind of in how to live the Christian life, if you will. some good pointers. Any other questions? We're going to quit early. Wow. I got 20 of... All right. Let's...